We're glad you're joining us here at NRCC Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts.
Last section of the lesson titled, How Many Acorns is Enough Acorns? This, as you've been hearing, is the practical section of the lesson. And today, we have some leftover bits and pieces before we go on to the last part. And the leftover part is stuff that I couldn't get to last week about the inventories that we take in our lives, and some one of the comments that came in the papers that came in last week. I want to talk a little bit about that. I thought it was a great comment. Then next week, we'll have one more practical tool, and then we'll be finished with the lesson. In the early part of the lesson, the theoretical part of the lesson, we talked about the ancient wisdom, how our texts have spoken about this issue of acorn chasing. The barn picture comes from a story that Jesus told about how many acorns is enough acorns. Well, in that section, we talked not only about the ancient wisdom and the traditional information about this, but we talked about how our brains work, and how brain science tends to integrate with the spiritual wisdom on this point, and talk about how we access our deepest desires. Well, if you missed those lessons, you can have a listen online. Then last week, we talked about our society's cultural norms and how they make it very difficult for us to say yes to the deepest desires of our hearts, or even to say yes to our own desires, because we live in a conspiracy of forces that are always at work trying to get us to say yes to the desires that somebody else wants us to have. So that's a little bit of what we talked about. This is a part I didn't get to last week. The assumption on which this lesson is founded, really the assumption that is essential for our community or for the spiritual journey, is this. We say it all the time. We highlighted it with our babies this morning. That each of us, at the deepest essence of who we are, each of us is made of the same stuff God is made of. We are all carriers of the breath of God. We are all carriers of the Spirit of God. Now, in practical terms, what that means for us is it defines how the spiritual journey goes. The spiritual journey I was taught growing up was a journey outside of myself, because we had overemphasized Augustine's doctrine of original sin, and we thought that everything inside of us was all bad, and so we had to go to somewhere else to get a dose of good or from God, or so we had to go to the book, or we had to go to the preacher, or we had to go to the mountaintop, or we had to go somewhere so that we could get this experience of the divine. And when we look back through our tradition, we realize, oh, that's not been the only way that we have thought about this. We've also thought about the Spirit of God being an indwelling reality, which makes the journey a journey inward. And it turns out, as we said the last couple of weeks, that when we discern the deepest desires of our hearts, when we strip away the should desires, when we strip away the personality-driven desires or the instinctive reactions to the world, and we find the deepest part of who we are, we have found the heart of God. It is a way in which the desires of our heart are shaped by the divine center. So that makes the spiritual journey an interior journey, which makes the quest for these deep desires of great importance, albeit they are hidden under these layers and layers of false self, hidden under these layers and layers of our shadow sides, which makes these deep, true self desires hard to access, because they get suffocated under these layers of external should. Here's what you should desire. But that's the spiritual journey, stripping away those lesser desires to access the divine center. That's working the circle. That's the curriculum that we talk about. It's the ancient wisdom of those who have gone before us that tell us, here's how you strip away those lesser desires. Here's how you access your truer, deeper desires. Here's how you access your made of the same stuff God is made of, dreams and desires. And we saw last week a very practical way to see those lesser desires to help us in the stripping away is to find out when they have set up camp in the middle of our lives and are dictating the terms of our days, is we do regular, unflinching, honest inventories, asking ourselves two questions. Where do our hours go? And where do our dollars go? Because here's the thing. Hours don't lie, and dollars don't lie. They tell us, here is where you are saying yes. They tell us, here is where you are saying no. They are telling us, here is what you are valuing, and here is what you are prioritizing. And having told us where our yeses are going, these inventories invite us to ask ourselves, is this what you want? Is this what you really, really want? Inventories help us strip away what Mom said that we should want and seek out our deeper divine center desires. Inventories help us strip away what the boss or the cube mates or the friends or the people that we went to school with or the people that we see on Facebook that we went to school with who now have tapes in the back of our heads that are constantly running, telling us what we should want, what we should desire. And so these unflinching inventories, they help us strip away those voices in our heads and ask us, are these the yeses that you want to be saying? Are these the things that matter to you? Are these yeses taking you where your deepest divine center self wants life to go? Now, if you haven't studied the Enneagram, that's okay, because the first Saturday in September, Robin will do a one-day seminar, and then we'll form groups. They're our longest commitment groups. They run from September through to May, and you will learn that every one of our distinct and different personalities, albeit in different ways, but every one of our personalities has a strategy for hijacking our deepest desires, every one of us. One cluster of personalities rejects the deepest desires of our hearts because we don't even explore them. Because that cluster of personalities has a default setting, and that is to react to other people's needs and to react to other people's desires. It is an instinctive response to the world and to those around us because it tells us that other people's desires are more important than our own divine center desires, our own image of God desires. Consequently, people in this personality cluster don't protect their time, and they don't protect their bandwidth, and they don't protect their energy because what I think might be important, what my deep abiding desires are, those things are less important than what others think is important. It can even go to the place where my need for sleep or my need for exercise or my need for a healthy plan for food is not as important as dropping everything to help you out. Because if I do that, you will approve of me and consequently you will support me. And then when I find myself in a time of need, you will come to my aid. And so I don't ask about my true desires. I follow a strategy that's going to keep my false self going. Another cluster of personalities deletes their deepest needs because somebody comes along and says what they should want. And for this personality, all it takes for them to stiff arm a good idea is for someone to come and tell them they should want it. If you want me to resist that idea, you just go ahead and tell me I should do it, and then I will make sure that idea doesn't happen. So, some authority figure comes along, especially authority figures, and says, this is what you should do. And even if it does reflect our deepest desires, that's it, it's finished. I'm not going to do that because somebody else told me I should do that. Another cluster of personalities has to do the right thing. So there is no time to explore, let alone act on my true desires. No, because I've got to do this important thing. I've got to make this important thing happen. So even when my body comes along and says, hey, these are some of your desires, you ought to slow down, you ought to read a book, you ought to take a nap, you ought to do something. Hush, body, I've got important goals to reach. I've got important tasks that need to be completed. And we could keep going because there's a multitude of strategies that we use to delete the deepest desires of our hearts. Every personality has a strategy for not discerning our deep dreams and for not fighting for those dreams. So, those who've gone before us in this tradition, they're not any smarter than we are, they're just more experienced. They're not any less susceptible to these traps than we are, they're just more experienced. And they write back to us and they tell us about a toolbox. And you hear about it all the time. We call it the circle, we call it the curriculum. This is the toolbox to help you deal with this instinctive response that deletes the deep desires of our hearts. And one of the tools in that box, the unvarnished inventory. One of the tools in that box is asking ourselves where our dollars go and where our hours go, and using something as practical as Quicken, using something as practical as Mint, using something as practical as Google Calendar, so that we can get the feedback we need to ask ourselves, where are our yeses going? And so, we set aside time on a regular basis to ask ourselves, are these yeses the yeses that I want? Are these yeses serving my deepest dreams? Are these a false self, should, ought to, supposed to set of yeses? Or are they taking me where I want to go? Now, hopefully, Scott and Michael are going to get together a class this fall to talk about some really important principles for financial health, but more, give us the opportunity to examine not only where our yeses go, where our financial yeses go, but also to examine what is the should that is driving those yeses in the first place. Because once we know what our pitfalls are, we have seen habit. Because if we've had this pitfall before, we will have it again, and it will happen in the future. So once we know what our pitfalls are, we are forewarned to be able to choose, shall I or shall I not service that yes? Well, that's about as practical as the spiritual journey gets. It's something as practical as looking at where your dollars go, where your hours go. So that's some leftover from last week that I didn't get to. The other thing I want to do today is respond to, talk about a little bit, something that somebody said in one of the papers that came in. It was a really helpful submission. So this person said, you know, Doug, this whole notion that you're talking about these last few weeks in the practical part of our lesson, finding our heart's deepest desires, stripping away the oughts and the shoulds and somebody else's desires so that we can find our divine center self-desires, that seems like the kind of thing that is reserved for people of privilege. Because how in the world are you going to do that when you're hard scrabbling to make ends meet? To even ask these questions, there has to be time. And there has to be capacity, and there has to be energy. And for a lot of people, all the time and capacity and energy gets sucked up just surviving. And here's a true thing. Having enough acorns to meet our survival needs allows us to move up Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That's true. And not having enough acorns costs us in hours and energy and capacity. Because what acorns do is they free up time and they free up energy and they free up capacity. And I know that pressure. When I read that, I had memories come to my mind knowing what that is like. I know the pain of not having enough hours because I didn't have enough dollars and I didn't have enough energy because I had to do these things because I couldn't do those things. We have a lack of dollar acorns sometimes, and that gets translated into fewer available hours, more work, more energy spent. And I know that pressure, and I know that pain. I also know the pressure and the pain that comes from having a deficit in other kinds of acorns. I know the pressure of not having enough emotional health acorns, because if you don't have emotional health acorns, you tend to do things that make life more difficult. I know the pain of not having enough wisdom to make good decisions acorns, or relational health so we can move into supportive relationships acorns. I know about having a deficit in family not crazy acorns. And I know that those things are very costly, and they strip things down to a more base, fundamental way of living that makes it very challenging, because when we are stretched to the limit, it is very difficult to make our best decisions. When we are stretched to the limit, we don't tend to gravitate toward those things that would help us. When we are stretched to the limit, we tend to be too exhausted to engage the kinds of relationship that would add nurture and support to our lives. When we are stretched to the limit, we don't tend to seek out the best practiced wisdom and the best practiced understanding that would allow us to make our decisions informed by a better future. We don't do that because we don't have the time, we don't have the energy, we don't have the acorns. Often we have just enough time, just enough energy to make it home and zone out with a little bit of Netflix, maybe a beer. Well, years ago, I was teaching at another church about meditation. They'd invite our community to share with them and for us to talk about our contemplative practice. And I spoke about how meditation allows us this capacity, this interior capacity, to detach from the false self. And I gave a little bit on how we do meditation. And afterwards, I don't think this was their practice, but it's ours, so I did it. I said, "So what are you thinking? What's God stirring up in your heart?" And a guy spoke up and he said, "You know, struggling with meditating or sitting in silence to let our compulsive thoughts go, that sounds like a nice project for rich people." Now, I can't remember what I said. I can't remember if I said the things I'm going to tell you I said, or if I thought afterwards I should have said these things, so I don't know. So forgive me if I didn't say this. But I think what I said was, "I think you're underestimating the capacity of poor people. I think I've been poor, and I've talked to poor, and I think that underestimates that." And I told the story of, I do remember telling this part, of John and Charles Wesley's mother. And she had 19 kids. I had to go back and look that up again because I remember that in my head. Sure enough, she had 19 kids. And for a year and a half of that time raising those kids, her husband left and she was on her own. And she knew about hardship and she knew about lack and she knew about not having enough acorns. And she had a practice that was a contemplative practice, and it was this: to take her apron and throw it up over her head. And every child in that horde knew, when the acorn is over the head, do not say anything to mom. Because she knew hardship, but she also knew the importance of accessing the deep divine center. So the apron over the head was a way of saying, we need silence. We need quietness. We need to get past the layers that would hijack our deepest desires. We need to find the divine center. So I said that, and I said, "And I think you also might be underestimating the importance of meditation when we are stretched to the limit. Because here's what meditation does. It detaches us from our false self instincts, and those instincts drive our days. Meditation awakens within us the capacity to step back from habit and to choose a different way, to step back from habit and to walk in a way that is healthier." And I said, "I think poor people need that capacity just as much as rich people need that capacity." Now, I hope I said something like that But I know I've said something very similar to many of you when we have been sitting at coffee and speaking, and I will say something along these lines. It's actually become, you might have heard this before. There is a cliff sitting up over an abyss, all right? So there it is. There's the cliff, and there's the abyss. And here's where what you don't want to do. You don't want to fall over the edge of the cliff into the abyss, because the abyss is just a lot of pain. The abyss is taking the pain that brought you to have this coffee together today and just expanding that by 3 times or 5 times. It's so much more pain. And so here's what you don't want to do. You don't want to go over the edge of the cliff. You don't want to go into the abyss. And this is you. And look how perilously close to the edge of the cliff you are. Look how close you are to abyss, and that is not good, because the abyss is a world of hurt. So, I will say, from where you are today, now you need to be very, very careful in which direction you take your next step. Because what you do today and what you do tomorrow and what you do tomorrow's tomorrow is going to be really important, because there is a risk. And the risk is that you will fall into the abyss. Might I suggest that you make your next step away from the abyss? And then we will talk about whatever was the cause that brought about this appointment. Maybe it's sex, and maybe it's money, maybe it's work, maybe it's family, whatever is the pain-creating reality that has put the specter of the abyss so close to the horizon. And then after we've talked about maybe some best practices around whatever that issue is, I will say, so from today forward, I would suggest that every day, for a good long time, you start taking your steps away. But I will say, here's the problem. If you were like every other human being, you don't know what steps it was that took you this close to the abyss. If we knew, we would have turned around a long time ago. We don't go to the abyss on purpose. We do it because we've got these invisible, these often unconscious instincts that say, this is a good thing to do. And then we do that thing, not realizing how close it is getting us to the abyss. If you'd known what these instincts were going to do and where they were going to take you that have brought about the pain that you're feeling today, you would have turned around a long time ago. And then I will say something like, don't feel bad. It's what we all do. I've done this in my life. Here's how we do it. And I will often mention this book. It's a good book, but it's a great title. The title is, How Come Every Time I Get Stabbed in the Back, My Fingerprints Are on the Knife? And then we will talk about how we tend to self-sabotage and usually do it unconsciously. We don't realize what we're doing. Nobody sets out to stab themselves in the back. Nobody sets out to begin walking toward the abyss, but we do it. And when we've put the knife in our back, or when we are perilously close to the abyss, here's what we tend to do. And I said, what we tend to do is we tend to focus on the external factors that we believe got us this close to the abyss. We tend to focus on the external factors that we think put the knife in our back. And we often can't control external factors. And there are always plenty of internal factors that we can control. Factors that have been having a hand in getting us so adjacent to the abyss. Those factors we don't tend to focus on. Those factors we don't tend to consider deeply. We tend to consider the external factors that made it so that I am here. So, then we'll talk about the ancient practices. We'll talk about the circle. We'll talk about the curriculum. We'll talk about whatever one seems particularly relevant for that situation, because I will say the ancient practices, they help us see what we don't see. And one of the things that we don't see is how it is that we've gotten ourselves this close to the abyss. And what the ancient practices do is help us shape the instincts that will help us step back and step back and step back and step back from the abyss. Which is kind of a roundabout way of saying, yes, it's true that time, energy, capacity to reflect on these deeper desires, this is not a luxury that is shared among all in equal measure. Some people have greater time, energy, and capacity, and some have less. But even if we have the dollars, even if we are rich, oftentimes we will feel a deficit of energy. We will be exhausted. Even if we are broke, even if we have dollars, it doesn't matter because we will always be short of something. On the days when we don't have an hour to give and feel stretched to the limit, on the days when we don't have an energy unit free at all, have nothing left to get up and keep going, when we don't have an ounce of emotional energy, or we can't access even an ounce of grace or patience or belief or hope or some other acorn that we don't have enough of, here's the thing. There's a reason why we're that close to the abyss, and that reason usually has our fingerprints on it, which means whether we are poor or whether we are rich, whether we have enough acorns or whether we are very short of acorns, we need to spend the little bit of resource that we have, the little bit of energy that we have, the little bit of emotional capacity that we have, the little bit of learning capacity that we have, the little bit of time, the little bit of energy we've got, asking these hard questions. Where are my yeses going? What am I valuing and prioritizing? And why am I valuing it? What are the shoulds that are driving my lesser desires? Because if we will do that, we afford ourselves the ability of stepping back, stepping back, stepping back, stepping back. Now, we do that by following the curriculum. We do that by getting together with spiritual friends and having conversations that are meaningful conversations about a self-awareness. We do that by meditating, where we detach ourselves from the power of habit so we can actually see other things that are options that we might not have seen when we were compulsed as we typically are by habit. We do that by learning, by gaining wisdom and understanding that we can apply in our days. We do that by giving to someone else, even when we feel like we're suffering in scarcity, because these dynamics have proven time and time again for century after century to be ways that we access the interior light that can act for us as a compass bearing that says, yeah, don't go that way. You need to go that way. You need to step back, not forward. So, and for that, in that toolbox, one of those practices is the inventory. Inventorying our yeses by asking ourselves fearless, honest questions. Where are my hours going and where are my dollars going? So my encouragement is to gather up your calendar, gather up your end of month cash flow report, gather up your Mint report. You know, you can do it with a credit card. If you're using a credit card, you can get that at the end and so they'll categorize it for you. And then gather up a trusted spiritual friend and talk about it. What are your yeses? And are those yeses emerging from your deepest self, your inner life self? And if they aren't, why not? What should are your yeses serving? What desire did someone else put in your head or tell you you ought to desire or tell you you should chase, and those are informing your yeses. Where are your yeses going, and why are they going there? That's the point of these inventories that we take, these questions that we have, these conversations that we share. And so, indwelling Holy Spirit, to be awakened to the inner life of the divine, and to use something as practical as an inventory of our hours, and an inventory of our dollars. May we be awakened to the light and to the life of the indwelling Spirit of God as we follow Jesus. Amen.
Here's a quick recap of the What Are You Thinking time we did following this lesson. And as we said, we'd love to hear what you're thinking too. Head on over to our community's Facebook page and post your thoughts. You can search Facebook for North Raleigh Community Church Downtown.
So the first person to speak up after we opened the floor said, you know, if I look at my hours, I think I'm going to be shocked at how I spend my time. My dollars, I feel pretty confident that I know where they go, but my hour yeses. And so I've kind of, as the lesson was going on, she said, been determining that it'll be really important for me to be kind to myself, to be gentle to myself as I make these changes. And I spoke up afterwards and I said, you know, I think that should have been half the lesson. Half the lesson should have been talking about how we make these changes incrementally. And if we are harsh toward ourselves, we actually shut off the whole process. So I was really, really pleased that she brought that up. So the second person spoke up, said, you know, doing the inventory, it's easy to see what we say yes to, but what's hard sometimes is to know where our no's are. Where would the appropriate no's, where should they be said? And I said, you know, in the traditional church that I grew up in, a reframing of that question would have been, how do I know that I've heard the voice of God, or how do I know I'm just acting on my own desires? And we talked a lot about, and I gave several illustrations of how we don't really know. What we do instead is we get better at it than we were yesterday. We trial and error our way forward. We learn, first of all, we just show up to the practices of quieting ourselves. And in that, we kind of change the dynamic. Then after the dynamic is changed, then we begin to observe. And then the next person spoke up said, yeah, and I think we do that best when we look for interior peace. When we make a decision or we listen for interior voice and then we act on it, and then we find an interior peace as we do, as opposed to finding a surge of energy that comes from our false self strategy. If we find that interior settledness, that interior peace, that's often a good indicator that we have found our way into this deeper understanding of the divine. The next person to speak up said, you know, even if we look at small increments as our expectation, even that expectation can be discouraging because I might not even see for a long period of time small incremental change. And they said, you know, maybe my standard ought to be the act of showing up, the act of doing the practices. Even if I don't see the results, the rhythm of my life is the belief that it's like watering the soil. Over the long haul, there will be difference, but I'm not showing up in order to see incremental change even. And I said, yeah, that is a good way to approach this thing, that we access the deepest wisdom that we have as a tradition, as a human race, and then we implement those things into our lives, and then we let the results take care of the results place. Yeah, that was great. Another person spoke up and said, I don't need to do an inventory. I know already. I spend way too much time playing games, way too much time doing puzzles, way too much time watching Netflix or whatever the thing was. And I said, ah, yes. Well, here, what you guys have got here is you've got a grade A number one preacher standing up and giving you gold on a silver platter. Ah, yeah. And then I said, one of the things that I heard was, you heard me say just a moment ago, was gather up your Quicken report or your Mint report, gather up your Google Calendar, and gather up your spiritual friend, the trusted context in which you can talk about these things, because that's how human beings change. We have the circle for a reason, and that is that in the ancient wisdom, we understand that the communal practices are essential. And so we get together with someone. And I said, now I know in this lesson, what I'm saying is just crazy talk for a lot of people, because there's no way I'm going to risk being rejected. There's no way I'm going to risk being judged if I get together and talk with someone about money, because our whole society, we don't talk about this kind of thing. But here I am saying, get together with a spiritual friend, share your life together, and talk about where your yeses are showing up in your dollars, where your yeses are showing up in your hours. And the fear of being judged, or the fear of being criticized, or the fear of not making enough money, or the fear of making too much money, or the fear of being rejected because you're too rich, or fear of being rejected because you're too poor, or whatever force is out there, it's going to compel you to not get together with a spiritual friend and process this kind of deep yes saying. And I said that pretty much condemns us to being here in the same place playing too many video games or spending too much on whatever next year, because the dynamic that brings about change is the communal practices. So yeah, I might a little bit of firm on that. I might have been a little firm on that one. And then finally, someone spoke up and said, you know, there's an app on your phone that not only tells you where your money is going, where your time is going, but also says, here's where your screen time is going. And I thought, well, that's a great thing. And she named the name of the app. I can't remember it. I've got a different one, but I think it's different for Androids or iPhones. Anyway, that's a quick recap of what happened during the What Are You Thinking time. As always, love to hear what you're thinking.
If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, NorthRaleighCommunityChurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page on your computer's browser, at the bottom on your phone's browser. Thank you.